Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Land for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. Life is full of conflict. There, I've said it. So what do you say about that? I mean, there's all sorts of things. I recall a story from my 1990s, from when I used to work in the big corporate world. When someone had a conflict in their professional life or career or in the company, they would seek out conflict management training. And when they returned, they had to share what they've learned with the team so everybody could learn what they learned. There was always something. This was just the reality of what we did. You know, here's the scoop, though, when I talk about reality. You were sent to conflict management training not because the company wanted you to better handle conflict or develop your skills as a leader. They generally sent you to conflict training because they felt you needed to be fixed, that there was actually something wrong with the employee, or definitely that their view of the person, you know, they had some issue around conflict itself. Now, fast forward to today's leadership. Now, remember, I said that was like in the 1990s, and we used to sort of joke about that. I mean, I guess you needed to be fixed or something. But today's leadership world might be a little bit different. I'd like to think it is. I'm very aware that, you know, since the late 90s, things have accelerated. Things are faster. People are putting in more hours in business and their personal lives. Therefore, people are probably experiencing more conflict on a day-to-day basis and maybe different types of conflict. I do suspect that there's different degrees of conflict. So it probably depends, right? What kind of degree of conflict, what kind of intensity you're dealing with. And organizations require more conflict management training from a leadership perspective to deal with issues today. Past-based solutions don't always work. We need to get ahead of the game with programs that deal with the issues that are happening today. So that's my statement today. Past-based statements or situations don't work anymore. Whether you're creating policies or having critical debriefing or dealing with harassment or something on a board of governments or just needing legal advice and negotiations, conflict is something that will eat at people on a regular basis, so we have to deal with it. Do you have a fight or flight response? How do you actually deal with conflict within your organization, within your teams, and with yourself individually as a person? So we're going to hang out with conflict consulting person today, Priti Shah. Did I get it correct, Priti?
You did.
I did. Well, that's great. On the topic of conflict. So there we go. I did want to mention the name of your company, and I noticed that it's not written on my sheet here. What's the name of your organization?
Praxis Conflict Consulting.
Praxis Conflict Consulting. Okay. Yeah. Might be good that I have that written down ahead of time next time, don't you think? Priti, tell us a little bit about yourself. I'm curious about your background, but a little bit about yourself just before we get sort of kicked off talking about this topic.
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Winnipeg, so born at the Old Grace Hospital, that is now condos in the Wolseley area, and lived here all of my life. So I'm an avid Jets and Bombers fan and a lover of the arts and theater and live music scene in this city.
Never a desire to leave Winnipeg out of curiosity.
Do you know, I've left the city to travel to 64 countries. So
Wow.
Yeah, I've had a great opportunity to go away and see other lands. And then I just love coming back to the city.
Okay, so now we are going to talk about the conflict stuff. But now you got me on this travel bin. So where do you get your passion to see other countries? Is that tied to anything? Or
do you know, it started out when I was young. My dad liked to travel when we were young. We took road trips like many other people do to the Black Hills or to Banff or, you know, to the beach. And then as finances allowed, he started to take us on plane trips.
Bigger trips. Okay.
Yeah. So got to discover other lands and cultures and ways of doing things and became passionate about keeping that up.
Oh, right on. So then part of your whole life is actually finding time to travel.
Yeah, and I've also done 10 or 12 trips where they've been volunteer trips to do habitat builds or other missions. And so you're able to contribute to another culture and not just sort of fly by in a touristy way, but get to know people from the country and the culture.
That's pretty impressive. 64 countries is very, very impressive. I just want to say that. Thank you for sharing that. Now, you're involved in the conflict consulting. So tell us a little bit about your business.
So I am a lawyer by background, and I'm still actually licensed to practice law. And I had been doing a number of different jobs, including doing civil litigation And I was the in-house counsel for a disability organization in the city. And when the organization folded, I was at a crossroads to really think about what I wanted to do moving forward. And I began to study techniques like mediation and arbitration. And I actually went back to school to learn about conflict resolution. And it hit me that, wow, I don't think that I've learned these skills, you know, the basics on how to deal with conflict and what I'm bringing into the situation. And I really think it would be great if other people got this learning so they would know that it's not unusual that we don't have the skills naturally to deal with conflict. We just sort of absorb what we have seen around the dinner table growing up, and we either take on our family patterns or we run as far away from them as possible. But we don't necessarily know effective ways to resolve conflict.
No, that's fair enough. How long ago was it that you made this transition? Because that sounds like quite a journey in itself.
It would have been the mid-90s. Okay. So I had been practicing for about 5-6 years and was thinking that I needed to do something different, and started my business and thought the focus should be on all the different tools that could assist people to resolve conflict.
Okay. When you're working with, so we just sort of get an idea, when you're working with organizations, I guess, what type of organizations or businesses do you actually work with?
So I have been really lucky in that I have government clients at all different levels. I work with large corporations, but I also have the opportunity to work with smaller businesses and many not-for-profit organizations. You know, it could be an association or it could be a charity. And then lots of First Nations businesses and governments.
So it's been very diverse.
Yeah. And that's been a great opportunity to see what are the common threads through different types of businesses, and also be aware of how you've got to make adjustments depending on the size of the beast.
The size of the issue at hand.
Well, and also the size of the organization.
Okay.
You know, sometimes the larger the organization, the more layers of bureaucracy you've got to get to figure out what the issues really are.
Okay. So it sounds to me like you're a person that's always on trying to identify the actual problem, the root cause of the situation.
Well, I think like any other business that may come before you, they'll come before you and say, you know, we think this is the issue. Maybe it's even taking your car to the auto body shop. The client will say, well, we think this is the issue. But you still have to do the needs assessment to figure out, okay, what is really going on before you put in the service to make the repair.
That makes a lot of sense. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll sort of branch off on that topic of what the common threads are and doing the needs assessments. This is Richard Lamb for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with a conflict management expert today, Priti, and we've been talking a little bit about her journey, actually, in terms of her career development or her career, what I always like to call a career arc, going from being a lawyer and then into conflict management and developing a practice and seeing the world, 64 countries. So I'm going to keep restating that. I think that this is so impressive. One of the statements that you made in our very first segment was you've done so much work in a variety of different organizations in our marketplace that you've often seen a common thread. So I guess my question would be, if we branch off on the word common thread, it sounds like there's like common challenges and things that happen within organizations. So what do you would say are some of those common threads that you've observed over time?
Well, I think one of the really major threads that happens in workplaces or in your home life is that we don't feel skilled to deal with conflict. So there are many people within a family unit or workplace who avoid conflict because there's no life experience of it turning out well. And so you keep it in, and or you don't relate to those other people within your team or family who are wanting to deal with things. And so things fester and grow and get worse. And it might have started with, you know, the other person's late, and now it's blossomed into something much larger. And so I think it's very common to have problems festering and growing and people feeling a lack of empowerment or skill to know what to do about it.
It's interesting to say that because when you make that statement, I always think of the iceberg analogy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one you use the most. Could you just sort of share with our listeners what the iceberg analogy is? Or if you don't know it, then...
It you know, that you'll be looking at the big iceberg on top, yeah. And it's not about that. It's about what is the small point below that you haven't gotten to.
Yeah.
And so it takes a little bit of energy to dig down and find out what it's really about. And particularly in workplaces, your staff don't necessarily trust that management or leaders are on board to want to create situations that are positive for their employees. So they're already coming in with that distrust. So again, that's another situation. What can workplaces and leaders within a family or organization do to build that trust that, hey, we're actually sincerely wanting to come in, whether it's, you know, making policy changes or otherwise, to make a better environment? Is that employees are used to things being taken away or being sanctioned or corrected or otherwise.
Yeah, and it's interesting you would say that because I was chatting with a executive of a transportation company, and this was in another province, just want to state that. And we were talking about some changes they were going through in the organization, and they took everybody's offices away. And they gave them open working spaces and shared open working spaces, right? And so I jokingly said to them, I said, I guess you bought them dinner and a movie. And that's exactly what they did. They gave everybody tickets to dinner and a movie to sort of
To
make up for such a major change.
And one of the remarkable things about these kinds of major changes is the organization will forget to have a series of employees participate in the transition team, to actually talk to them about what are going to be the stressors of this change and how can we minimize some of these stressors and what do you need and what do you anticipate and what are the worries going to be? And they just leave them out and think, hey, here's this present. That'll make up for the fact that your life is going to be chaos now.
For a while, anyway. It's quite interesting that you would use that as an example, because I know that you deal more with conflict management and I deal more with strategic planning and facilitating. And I always find it fascinating when we're going through the planning process that organizations will actually choose to leave their employees out.
Right.
Or key members, right? And then they wonder why people are not implementing what they wanted to do.
Like right. I did a strategic planning a couple of weeks ago, and we had as many leaders from management there as we did board members.
Okay.
And, you know, sometimes we work together, sometimes we work separately. And I made them all, you know, move out of their seats so they weren't sitting in groups. And they were like, oh, it was really great to know this other person and understand what they were bringing to the table. And I said, well, you know, you can have all the great oversight vision you want, but the management has to talk to you about what's realistic and, you know, how they could vision putting your priorities into place.
Yeah, strategic to tactical.
Yeah, and the dialogue needs to be going back and forth. You can't leave out a piece of that puzzle and expect that it's all going to fall into place. And sometimes you have leaders who have been technically sound in an organization who've risen to the top, but they don't have those people skills and need a little bit of assistance. and to get there.
And that's a very common situation. I think it's often technical professionals, I like to call them, as you mentioned. They're very successful at what they do. And then somebody comes along and says, you're so successful at what you do, now be in charge of these 6 people, now be in charge of these 25 people, we're going to make you a manager.
Right.
And that itself probably brews a lot of conflict.
Right. And sometimes those persons might just need some coaching. They need someone external that they can run things by and say, I was thinking of doing this, what do you think? And they can be coached into looking at some options because they didn't study this people management side.
That whole particular area. You know what we're going to do? We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I think we maybe could talk a little bit about people management and some options in terms of developing people skills. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's Richard Lanford, Set for Success, and I am hanging out with Priti, and we're talking about conflict management. Just before the break, we were talking a little bit about just some of the changes that organizations go through and the stressors and getting people involved in the process and also building trust within an organization or a team, whether it be in an organization or maybe even family members, it could be. I'm just wondering if you might be able to give our listeners some examples, maybe tell us a story about some of the things you've done or some of the things that you've worked on.
So you started off the day talking about conflict management training and you know, in the past, people being sent for that training. It really makes the most sense if training is available for people in intact teams or groups and people are participating together. And more than 20 years ago, I was sent up north to work with some teams that were working there. And probably about an hour into the program, there was a particular employee, I'll call him Joe, who piped up and said, well, you know what? I don't really like women, and I particularly don't like women who are lawyers, and I think they should all be shot. And I said, you know, Joe, I think you got to be here today, and I've got to be here today, and I've got to feel safe and respected while I'm here, and you have to feel safe and respected. And I'm not feeling so good right now, but I said, you have to be here so you can finish out the day, or you'll have to sign up again and come back and do the first hour again and be back with me. So I think you've got to think about what you just said and
what it means.
We've got to figure out a way to work together because I don't feel so safe. And he backed down and he apologized and sort of explained he wouldn't behave that way again. And on break, I had 20 people lined up to say, oh my goodness, nobody's ever told Joe to back down.
Okay.
You know, Joe does this all the time and this is so good. So it goes to show that sometimes we need to tackle as a workplace something more directly than sending somebody off for training where they don't really understand. You know, we might need to coach an individual. And in fact, some years ago, I had to coach an individual who had been involved in some harassment claims. He was technically very sound. I was flown up to the small town to work with him. They'd rented a room for us to meet for one-on-one. And we got into the room and there was a heart-shaped hot tub. So we laughed and we joked about how ridiculous our venue was, and then we got down to work.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, worked together, and he was able to disclose, you know, what were the things that were driving his behavior. We could understand them and work on them. So sometimes training's great, but sometimes we have to have a more facilitated solution to deal with the actual problem. Sometimes we need policies that are missing. So we've got to put those in place and educate people on how they work and what are the systems to deal with the problem.
When you talk about policies, I'm curious as to, can you give us some examples of what some organizations or clients that you've worked with, what kind of policies they've had to put in place in order to help rectify conflict?
Well, some places don't have policies dealing with harassment, discrimination, and violence.
Which are big topics today.
Yeah, and those are legally required, both federally and provincially, that you have those in place. Lots of workplaces do not have conflict resolution policies. so the staff don't know where to go if there is a concern, if they're uncomfortable with their immediate team leader. What are their other options? Or they're not even directed to go to their team leader or potentially their union steward. So they're unfamiliar with what's going to happen. So again, what they do instead is go to the lunchroom and talk to four friends who create a silo, and the other person's doing that and creating another silo, and the groups don't even know why they don't like each other. And again, you're breeding conflict in the workplace because, again, people aren't skilled.
Are people sometimes afraid to, I don't know if the word is acknowledge or say there is a conflict, as there might be retribution or something?
Sure, sure. Yeah. They're afraid that they'll be labeled as the troublemaker. And what you also hear commonly is, I don't want to say anything because the workplace has a history of not addressing things.
Okay, okay.
So what is the point of going to the mat on that when nothing's going to happen? So workplaces have to figure out how to respond. And that's where sometimes they need some third-party intervention to say, hey, here's some of your options for dealing with this situation.
I've sometimes heard we started this segment off talking about training, but I was sitting in a program one time and I had the facilitator asked a very interesting question. She said, what V are you, right? And I said, what V are you? And she goes, well, are you a vacationer, right? A volunteer or a victim? Mm-hmm. And I always thought that that was sort of fascinating, because then she had everybody go around a room, and it required trust. And I guess a volunteer, you wanted to be there, right? You felt you were positive about it and everything. A vacationer, basically, I'm here, but, you know, I'm planning on snoozing. And a victim was like, well, they sent me here. And it was fascinating to see the responses. And I sometimes wonder, when I go into an organization, you know, because of what I witnessed of that, what V are the people I'm working with, right? Or they fall into that category. I don't have a question here. It's just sort of a point, actually.
And on top of that, sometimes what happens is you've got a workplace where there's one person who's late and the whole team of 12 gets the memo reminding about hours.
Yes.
Well, that's not tackling the person who is late. And maybe the person who's late has some dramatic changes in their family life and we need to make some adjustments, but we haven't sat down and had a conversation with that person to say, what's going on for you?
That's interesting you would say that, because years ago I used to run, and I want to share this because I think there's other people out there just like this. I used to run a team of 25 people, and this is some time ago. But I had one particular office, I had one staff member that was always late all the time, and the staff around them would be always complaining. And it was interesting we used that example, because I sat down with her and we talked about what it was and everything. And it was a legitimate reason, like it was a legitimate family reason to be late. And the reality of it is our solution to that problem was we just adjusted her start time to a half hour later, but then she had to stay a half hour later. But that also took getting the team together to get them to agree that this was a good thing for everybody. And so we made a few adjustments in timing, and it rectified the problem. It was no longer that they were late. They were now on time, just a half hour later.
Right. And still producing.
And still producing, right? Very productive, right? So sometimes, I don't want to call it an easy fix, but with a large organization, you had some hoops to jump through. I had to get permission. I mean, there was just a bunch of things that went on. But sometimes it could be as simple as that.
And that's where sometimes the team leader has failed to do that needs assessment to figure out what's actually going on here. And sometimes you become alerted to an issue and the leader will go in and say, why did you do that?
Yeah.
And it's like, instead of saying, hey, what's going on for you? This is what the team is experiencing or the organization is experiencing. How can we make it work for you and us at the same time? And that goes back to what we talked about sometime earlier, that lack of trust that somebody else is actually invested in wanting to make things better.
Yeah, and it's always something I actually deal with. I do find conflict being one of those topics fascinating, because I like to think in life that, haven't we figured this all out yet? But it's just not the way it is. It's sort of like what's happened yesterday will happen again. We just need to learn how to get ahead of it. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Priti, and we're talking a bit about conflict management. And you know, we've actually covered a lot of different topics, I mean, from the legality of conflict, and legality within organizations and structures of teams, and just even some examples of stuff that you've seen in your work. I was reading up on some information and off your website that started to fascinate me, because there's some terms that you have there, and I love terms. You have things like critical incident debriefing. Like, what's critical incident debriefing? I have to ask.
So in a workplace, there may be a critical incident. Maybe it's a violent incident.
Okay.
Somebody has a partner who has stalked them within the workplace. There may be a domestic violence incident that happens within the workplace, and there needs to be some debriefing within the team. On an emotional level and also on a practical level of how is the team going to reintegrate. If you think about some of the violent incidents that we've had in some of our schools, they would need critical incident debriefing to deal with what happened, how do they process it, what could have been done better, what will be done in the future, how's everybody going to cope and adjust.
And maybe even use the word earlier on, feeling safe, just to sort of feel safe. I'm sorry, that's the thought that just came to mind, especially when you're talking about critical incidents, because everybody wants to feel safe, don't they?
Right.
Yeah, I guess they do. Just sort of a statement. You also have workplace and harassment investigations. How often do you get involved in those kind of things?
Probably not as often as I should, in that if there is a concern that arises, a complaint, an incident, an accident, an occurrence that needs to be investigated, sometimes an organization doesn't have the resources in-house. People might not be skilled at investigation, or they may be conflicted out. You know, they're the person who supports that staff. They can't see clearly, or they don't have the time to attend to this immediately and put, you know, 5-12-hour days in to figure out what happened. And so I'll be called in to do the investigation, make the findings on what has happened, and usually make some recommendations moving forward.
It was interesting you would say they don't have the time, because the three things that always come up as the common constraints, right? Time, resources, or the money to deal with something.
Right. They're all resource issues.
They're all resource issues, right? And so when we start talking about critical incidents and workplace harassment and investigation, it sounds to me like there's a lot of resource issues there.
Right. And, you know, beyond that, it goes again back to the trust issue. If there's a concern levied against someone senior within the organization, nobody's going to trust that someone within the organization is going to do an impartial investigation. So sometimes an organization needs to bring that outside credible trained resource to give that impartial investigation and recommendations.
Since we're using the word investigation a bit here, and I know we're sort of stepping off something else, you have a background as a lawyer. How has your legal background helped you in your present practice into conflict resolution, conflict management?
Well, it certainly helps in that I'm on top of the law in terms of were this case to go before the court, these are the expectations that they'll have in terms of the kind of investigation that was conducted. Thinking about fairness and confidentiality and upholding those high standards and, you know, knowing there's countless times that I'll be in the mall and I'll know somebody, but I am never going to disclose how I know them.
Of course, of course. You know? And if you do have to say hi or whatever, you just treat it as if it's just somebody you know.
Right. Yeah. And so it's a high standard that comes from the professional background.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. I think that's reasonable. I just wanted to see how they both connected. I had a vision of it in my own mind because you can't help but be a lawyer and conflict. Like those two just sound like they're married, right? They just sort of go together. Not saying that lawyers are full of conflict.
Well, just lawyers
that
are
dealing with conflict
one
all the time.
Or two different methodologies of conflict resolution, right? They're dealing at the very high intervention end. And for my clients, I want them to avoid needing legal services as much as possible.
Okay.
So, to deal with things at an early intervention stage, I'm not trying to put my colleagues out of business, but I'm trying to minimize the times that the clients need those services.
Oh, that's reasonable. There's a lot of professions that are like that, where if you wish you step through the phases, hopefully you solve it earlier on. And if you don't, then things progress.
Right. So before you have to terminate this person, let's give them the skills they need to succeed.
Make the investment for their success.
Right.
There you go. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
So they can find me on my website, which is praxisconsulting.ca, and that'll give all the contact information to email me, make a website inquiry. But I love it when they telephone and talk about what's going on.
You like the phone, eh? You like
Absolutely.
People
phone. Yeah. So if you email me, I'm going to phone you back and say, let's have a conversation about what's going on for
What's going on and everything. That's probably what makes you extremely successful. Name of your company. I didn't ask you this in the first segment, but I'm always interested in why people name their company the way they do. What's the story behind your name?
So the word praxis is a Latin word that means to turn your knowledge into action.
Okay.
Another way to look at it is the practical application of theory. So it really resonates with training and other services that it's great to get that knowledge, but I want to help people to make the praxis where they're actually able to apply that knowledge. They're not just coming to sit with me and get a certificate in a training program. I want them to walk away feeling like this is how I'm going to use this information.
Have you ever had anybody get back to you after going through some training or coaching or through a session with you and say, you know what, I did this thing that you suggested and these are the results. Can you share a little story about that?
Yeah, all the time. All the time. People will say, I tried that out and it actually worked. I can't believe it. Or they'll say, you know, I came for work, but I've been using that thing with my teenager and life is better at home.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
So that's a good connection between what we do at work
and
life.
One common thing, I'm sure with the teams you work at, you'll stimulate them to have team meetings. And I'll often say to families, how often are you having team meetings in your household? I never thought of that. I said, well, then how are you figuring out how you're all going to handle this thing coming up?
Oh. Well, why would we have a team meeting? My wife and I this is where I got to share a story. Earlier on, we made it a requirement that we would all have dinner every evening from 5:30 to 6:30. And that's our table topics and all that stuff come up. So I agree. I think you have to have meetings, whether it's sort of a day-to-day thing or you add other things in. And in your organization, you need it
right.
too. Wow. I've just thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. So it's been a great show. I always like topics and that deal with whatever we can do to make businesses, organizations, or teams or individuals, even families, just be better. So this is one of those. If you had a final thought, what would you share with our listeners?
I think I would say don't be afraid of conflict. So instead of worrying about all the things that are going to go wrong, think about the fact that it's not good where it is and all the things that could be better.
Okay. So flip it over on its side and look at all the pros and try to make that improvement. That's a pretty good list. Thank you for hanging out with me today. I really appreciate it. Listeners, thank you for tuning in. You know what I'm going to say. If you have a question, a thought, or an idea for a future show, please do send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.